look at other work that does inspire you and nick bits of it. And then it filters through you, what you do, what you see, and it all does create something new.
You're listening to Seamside, where we explore the inner work of textiles. I'm your host, Zach Foster, and today we sit down with textile artist Russell James Barrett. But before we get to chatting with Russell, I got two things I want to share with you. Number one, a beautiful review that just came in. And this one comes from CSD954. Oh, what a name. Life-changing, 5 stars. Found this podcast, CSD said, at the exact time I needed it. I've only listened to 4 or 5, and not in any particular order. The one with Paolo Arau has been my fave so far. This is all about creativity and inspiration. It is refreshing and much needed to shift the focus away from turning everything into making money. Every episode has me nearly in tears as my brain remembers what it was like to be flooded with emotion and color and light. I only got one thing to say to that, folks. Hot damn. That's pretty good. I mean, I hate that you're in tears, CSD, but I'm so thrilled to hear that your brain is getting flooded with emotion and color and light as you listen to Seamside. I hope that's true for you too, that when you listen to these conversations, it lights you up inside. If that's the case, I ask only one little favor from you, and that is to write a kind 5-star review. I know it may not sound like such a big thing, but it really does mean a lot. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, you may have heard that I recently put out a free ebook. It's yours for the taking if you want it. It's called 10 Things I Wish I Had Known Before I Started Quilting. Reflections on the nature of what we do. I guess you can only learn by doing, but maybe these reflections will help speed up your learning curve just a little bit. Like, for example, reflection number 3, don't be afraid of fabric. I don't know about you, but I can instantly think of several beautiful pieces of fabric that I spent way too much money on at the store, brought them home, put them in my stash, and never touched them again because I was just so afraid of messing it up. Remember, you know how to sew, so what's the worst that could happen? You cut something up, so what do? You sew it back together? That sounds like a quilt to me, folks. So if you're interested in getting your own free copy of 10 Things, check out the link in the show notes below, and I'll zip it right over to you, and you'll be reading these quilty reflections in no time. Now, on to today's show. Russell James Barrett and his wildly joyful quilts make me want to create an intercontinental lasso and bring the UK and the US a lot closer together. His work is loud and joyful, and his demeanor is gentle and composed. So these two sides of Russell make for an eminently enjoyable friend to chat with. In this Seamside conversation, Russell and I explore how he balances the tension between empty space and maximalism. Why the arc of creative exploration is longer than long, and how we can use our quilts to say things that words just can't touch. I hope you enjoy How to Say Yes to High Volume Joy with my good friend, Russell James Barrett. Welcome to Seamside, Russell.
Thanks for having me. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, this is such a pleasure. We talked over a year ago on Soft Bulk with Heidi Parks and Luke Haynes. And so in some ways, this could be viewed as a follow-up, but also I think one thing that's so special about Seamside is that we get to go even more in depth than we were able to on Soft Bulk. And so I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I want listeners to know before we really begin that of all the Seamside guests that I've had on the show over the last 3 years, you may be the only one whose work I actually have in my home. That in the main hallway that connects our dining room to the bedroom is a skinny little hallway, and on it hangs "Love It!" exclamation point, which features a pair of, I'm assuming, your old Nike socks.
Yeah,
seed stitched down on like this crazy pink floral.
Authentic.
Yeah, so I think of you literally twice a day when I brush my teeth because I can't stand right in front of the mirror to brush my teeth. I always like walk around the apartment.
Something to look at. Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, I'll go look at Russell's socks for a little while.
So weird. I love it.
Isn't it?
I mean, I love it.
Love it. How can you not? Russell, can you describe for us where you're located right now?
I'm at home at the moment in East London. It's a nice, well, fairly sunny afternoon. So I have a small flat and we for ages just kept it all white. And then one day we decided, no, so half of the room is pink and the other half is yellow.
What shade of pink and what shade of yellow?
Well, they started off really bright, and this, because the sun comes in, it's actually kind of bleached out the pink. So it's a nice kind of, I was going to say tasteful, but I hate that word. It's a muted pink now. It used to be a lot brighter. But I do all my quilting here. It's sort of, I sometimes refer to it as my home studio, but it's basically the only room in the house other than the bedroom. But yeah, so it's full of quilts and knickknacks and everything.
It's just so joyous too, looking at it.
We still have actually our paper chains up from Christmas.
And I love
it's
that.
My partner's birthday in April, so the sort of Christmas decorations that aren't too Christmassy usually stay up until his birthday.
Oh, the last holiday of the season.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I do a lot of my work in the eat-in portion of our eat-in kitchen in this one-bedroom apartment. Yeah. And so, yeah, I will often call it the studio. Between me and my partner, I often call it the nook. I mean, it's the original nook before I even started all of that. And it's not glamorous, but big things are made.
You make it work.
Make it work. Exactly. I thought of you this morning, too. It felt kind of like a very positive harbinger for this conversation, because I was walking around my neighborhood thinking about what I wanted to ask you about. And I was walking down one particular block, and there were all these red flower petals, like plastic silk flower petals that had like become detached from some stem somewhere and had blown all the way up the block. And so I started collecting them. And the reason they made me think of you is because they must have come from a rose or something, because they're almost perfectly round. And I'm like, look at all these beautiful red dots that I could put.
Dots everywhere. I would have stopped to photograph that. 100%.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have the perspicacity to photograph it, but I did collect them. So they will wind up in a work soon.
How nice.
Yeah. I've got so many projects of yours that I want to talk to you about. And I'm wondering if a good place to start might be a quilt that you did recently working with some primary school kids.
Yeah. It was a project that I was actually directed to by a lady I didn't actually know on Instagram, but she put my name forward to an artist in residence at the primary school. And she got in touch and she was basically wanting to make a quilt and involve this, I think they're 8-year-olds. I can't remember which year that is at high school or at primary school, I should say. So to teach the kids for their sort of art lessons, they would do dyeing, natural dyeing, bashing in petals into fabric. That's got a name. I can't remember.
Eco-printing maybe?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the results were spectacular. And then they did collages. So I was invited along to work with the artist Veronica Rowlands on this collaging, fabric collages. And then I would take it all the way and sew it all together. And I was slightly hesitant at first because I've never worked with children. I'm not really around children of that age. So it made me nervous. I haven't been back to a school since I think I was at school. So that made me nervous. But last year was, at the start of last year, I made a sort of New Year's resolution. The word bold was my thing for the year. I'm going to be bold and just say yes to everything. And, you know, so I did. And we worked out that it was probably best for these kids rather than sit down and teach them sewing. We used fabric glue instead. And they were to think about things that gave them comfort. Inevitably, it was toys, and make a collage of it. And initially, I think a lot of the kids were thinking of, you know, like Xboxes and gaming things, which don't really translate very well into fabrics. But ended up a lot of them did teddy bears and dolls and a picture of themselves, or some of them did wild, just abstract things that it was so fascinating to see how different kids get creativity. Some of them were very literal, some were very, as I say, abstract. And in the meantime, Veronica had also done classes with some of the parents and some of the carers for the kids. So they'd done embroideries of themselves and embroideries of some of the kids with special needs that maybe couldn't do their own work. They'd done embroideries of things that they were into. So I came home with all this work after the lessons and then sewed it all together and, yeah, made this quilt. And we have a space on the wall in the school where it's going to go. And so I had to keep measuring it to make sure everything was within tolerance. I had to keep like shrinking things down. So there was a bit of a sort of a technical maneuver there as well. And I didn't want to cough any of the work, so I was having to cough any slack on some of them that I could. And some of the bits got tucked in, and some of the FVK I undid a bit to put over to the next square. And then I just, quilted the whole thing, which was a bit of a struggle because some of the thicknesses were quite dense. But the point of the blanket was that it was meant to be a comfort object, multi-generational comfort object. So there was whole different literal and metaphorical layers to the project that was really eye-opening. And it was the first sort of major thing I've done for somebody else that I didn't start out with the idea of. So in some ways that was freeing, in other ways it was so restrictive. But I learned a lot about my own work. I learned a lot about the time that I tell people I make things in is actually a lie, that things actually take much longer than what I might tell somebody.
I assume that's because I'm the same way. I'm like, I've only been quilting for an hour, and then I look at the watch or something, and I spend like all afternoon. Must be flow state, is what I figure. You say that it was eye-opening and that you learned so much about yourself and your own work, time being one of them. Were there some other things that rose to the top for you with this project?
Well, I mean, working with children, as I say, to realize that, I mean, in a classroom situation, there's a sense of order. So it's not that scary for when you're a guest. Most of the kids were delighted that it was an art class. So that was a whole new thing I'd done, actually standing, just going up to children and talking to them and trying to get them to engage and open up was a sort of a revelation to me.
Was it easier, harder?
Well, I found I got into the flow of it. So we did, as I say, there was the three classes. So by the third one, we knew the kind of the marks you have to hit and things that they have to be told beforehand.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the chaos kind of ensues. And that some need encouragement. And you can sit and look at a room full of sorry kids and pick out the ones that you think are going to need encouragement because they sort of hold themselves smaller and they're much more introverted. And some of them I would speak to and they literally wouldn't say a word. Which was strange, but I guess that's how some people are, let alone children. So that was very eye-opening. And also the whole project of comfort objects, both Veronica and I spent a lot of time just talking about it and thinking about it. We're talking about the psychology of objects and memories from childhood. And it was really interesting because, I mean, basically a lot of my work is about stuff I loved as a kid or that we had at home. So it does actually interconnect with certain fabrics. And some of the fabrics that we used had been donated, so some of the kids recognized the fabrics, which added another layer for them, So yeah, there was a whole load of things. It was a really interesting project. I wouldn't like to have to teach kids every day, but it was interesting in small doses.
Would you do it again?
We might be arranging something, yes. Okay. Yes, quite possibly. One of the nicest things, I have to say, because I did a short presentation with each class to show them what my work was, there's nothing more heartwarming than a class full of small children going, wow, when you get your work out. I'm nervous about showing anybody. And I would show them a quote, and they'd all be like, oh my gosh, look at this.
What were they responding to?
Just, I guess they didn't know what to expect. I guess children don't know necessarily what it's going to look like. And my work is obviously clothes and dots, and a lot of it's fairly bright. So I think they were just absolutely gobsmacked by, because they've just done an hour or so of maths beforehand or something. So it's really exciting. I took a step back. I was like, wow, they're really excited. And then loads of questions like, how long does that take you? And where did you think of these ideas? And then trying to get around in my head how to explain this to young children. Just be like, it's fun. It's what I do.
It has to be so satisfying to you as someone who thinks a lot about incorporating joy and love and positivity into their work to see that reflected back to you in such like an unfiltered way from children. Had to be really satisfying.
Yeah, it was. I think that's exactly it. It was unfiltered and they got no preconceived notions. One of the first questions one kid asked was, well, you make money from doing this? And I was like, not all the time. Sometimes I do.
Children, there are different kinds of currency in this world. The sooner you learn that, the better. That's incredible. It reminds me of just this kind of like genuine knee-jerk response to something that you've made. Makes me think of a moment recently where I've been kind of devising prototypes for these small handheld quilts that are responses to evangelical conservative Christian tracks, you know, trying to court people over to the Jesus team. And so I'm trying to make a more inclusive response to those. And so I made this small hand-sized handheld little tiny quilt that said, you know, they have different little slogans and sayings and such. Anyway, so I just finished the first one. I was putting the final touches on it. My partner walks in the room, having no idea what I've been working on or what I'm thinking about. And he did something that he never does. He yanks it out of my hand. He said, "It's mine now." And I just thought, holy crap, I think I just did what I meant, what I set out to do, right? Because, you know, when you think about evangelical tracts, they're meant to be passed hand to hand. They're meant to be held. They're meant to be stuck in your pocket and all that kind of thing. And so I'd created this little object that evoked the response that I was hoping it would, that you wanted to have it in your hand. And I was just like, dang, that's a beautiful, powerful moment. Because as artists, yeah, when we're making things that don't necessarily have a strict parallel in this world, we don't always know how it's going to be received. And so it's nice when those metaphysical dots are connected for us.
Yeah, that's the magical bit. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, this project, maybe an interesting one to start with, because it doesn't really so much look like the rest of your work. There were 90 some hands that went into making this project. But thematically, it truly resonates deeply with the rest of your work. And I'm wondering, what if we hop to Oh My Giddy Aunt, which might be my all-time favorite piece of yours, Russell, at least at this point. You know, I'm going to hold space for you, yeah, to create something that will knock my socks off even more. But at this point in time, Oh My Giddy Aunt, for me, is iconic Russell Barrett. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. In some ways, it's one of the most simple quilts I made. I made it specifically to enter into the Festival of Quilts that they do in Birmingham every year. And I just had this purple shirt that I bought vintage, and I bought it with the intention of doing something with it because it's purple, which isn't really a color I use very often, with a black check on it. And I was putting it down. I knew I wanted to sort of flat press it and make it dance in some way and have a shape. But there was too much purple, you know, these sort of creative notions suddenly take over. So I thought it's just going to be the skeleton of the edges of the shirt or the seams. And I started cutting into it and had a few moments of immediately regretting it, like, oh God, I've ruined it. I'm going to have to sew it back together. But no, I went for it. And it really, it again, by taking something away, I had added something, because you could see it's a shirt, obviously, but it's sort of weird and you can see it's dancing. And it's almost like it's just a line drawing of what a shirt's going to be eventually. And then that, the is that a clash or a contrast of the yellow behind it, which was a pair of trousers actually bought in the same shop in Amsterdam years before. I just loved the purple and the yellow together, so it really set it off. And as I sort of built up around it, there's patchwork around it that was actually an unfinished project that I bought on eBay, somebody else's. It wasn't like it sort of bowed out. It wasn't like flat, like somebody had not really sewed it together very well. So I had to sort of reconstruct it a bit. And then I became obsessed with the idea of that your eye tries to create grids or tries to make lines when you look at something. So it's some of it is patched on top of it to disrupt that. And it's all at a slight angle because I wanted the giddiness of the shirt to be mirrored in the background. And so all the time as I was making it, it was really just, it wasn't deep. It was just stuff that I liked together. And once I'd finished, I didn't know what to call it because I didn't have a story. I didn't have some deep-rooted childhood memory or something particularly around it. And then I just thought, well, you know, things don't have to be deep all the time. This is purely about joy. It's about dancing. It's about fun. And it's funny because so many people responded to that one. And it's always the easiest work is sometimes this comes through. It's the best.
It's the purest, yeah.
Purest, exactly. I did struggle with the quilting of it, though. I quilted it in white, and then I'd done quite a bit of it, about, I don't know, a quarter of it. And I decided I hated it and took it all out and started again in black, which is rare for me. I normally stick with an idea and keep going.
So what's your calculus then for not leaving those stitches in? When do you decide to leave them? When do you decide to take them out?
I don't know. I don't know, actually. I think sometimes I just push forward and just see what happens and sort of be authentic to the process. But there was something about it. I just immediately looked at it and was like, that's wrong. I hate it. So I just change. Sometimes you just know. It just feels, yeah, in the moment, no, I'm taking this all out. Yeah, I don't really know why, because normally I do kind of sort of think, no, hold your nerve, Russell, like keep going and see what happens. I feel like I'm not necessarily doing it, just see what stars align and something happens. But with that one, it was, no, we're changing it today.
Yeah, it's a largely intuitive process, isn't it? I know that, you know, Amanda Nadig and I talk about this quite a bit, which is that we're both pretty loose. You're loose, right? Like yeah. We can be sloppy, we can be messy, and all of these are kind of virtues that we're actually kind of trying to cultivate, right?
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that we don't have some kind of ideal in our own mind, a way that we're envisioning this project coming into fruition. And if the process gets to a point where it feels like it's taking us away from that, sometimes we do make that hard call to say, you know what, I'm going to scrap all those hours of work because I know that this is not the right path anymore, that I can get back on a path that will hew more closely to my vision. But then there's a lot of times where you're like, you know what, moving right along. So like, what's the difference? I mean, I don't know if we can really, you know, write it down into a formula, but I would say my first instinct is to leave stitches like that. But sometimes you just know they got to come out.
Yeah. I have done it before where I've ended up stitching over it.
Well, the black here provides a really nice contrast. I mean, I think it was a smart move to switch because on that bold field of yellow, those black stitches really stand out, but then they also mirror the plaid and the patchwork pieces in the background.
Yeah. So it turned out for the best in the end. Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous. You could turn this into a whole series if you wanted to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely going to do more smaller quilts with pressed shirts. I mean, I always have lists of things I want to do. It's finding time to get around to it, but.
No, oh, I know. That's the thing. Oh, my giddy aunt. Absolutely love it. Can we hop over to another one of my favorite pieces? We talk about love. We talk about dishwasher tablets.
Yeah, that was made in exactly the same time period. I was studying at the time at Morley College in Waterloo in London. And they have a big fabric bin where everyone puts their remnants and scraps and everything. And I'd got this, the top. Right hand side of it is a tablecloth that was all into sections and strips. So I reorientated it to be a corner. And so that was my starting point, a tablecloth. And a lot of my work, as I say, is about the domestic setting fabrics we have at home. So I just started grabbing together things that were from home, like upholstery fabrics. There's a bit of toweling on it. There is a couple of bits of old lace on it. And then the tea towel of the advertising Vaseline on it.
With the slogan that says, now that you finish washing up, keep your hands from drying up, right? Like it has this really canned sense of marketing from, I'm going to guess the 80s. Is that your vibe with?
I think so. Yeah. I think it must be. Yeah, it's funny. And also on the tablecloth, it doesn't always come out in pictures, but there's literally a coffee cup stain where somebody's like stained it with a drink, the ring off the bottom.
Yeah.
So I obviously got left because I thought that was brilliant. That's totally where I'm at.
I love that coffee ring and I see it looking in the picture. And we'll make sure to get images of all these on the episode website for people to see themselves. But the coffee stain reminds me of a recent piece. I was talking to somebody on the Nook, Barbara Cameron, and she is a caretaker for her mother, who every morning will go and pour a cup of coffee in the kitchen, you know, start her day that way. But she often will make spills and little dribbles and things like that. And so Barbara had this idea of taking a piece of fabric, covering that section of the counter with that piece of fabric and leaving it there for several days. So all of these drips and rings get captured as part of the memory of like this fabric and the moment that her mother's living with her and all of that. I think that's such a beautiful way to capture such a small daily routine, but that also speaks to much larger relationships and shared space and things like that.
Yeah.
And so while you probably don't know the person who made the coffee stain on yours, I love that connection. There was a human there that did that.
Well, exactly. I mean, in this sort of in a textile arty way, it's mark making. It's just, it's another interesting way to find another shape or design, but also it's the, those sort of the mundanity of life and things also that you're told not to do. Like, you know, parents are always like, don't use a coaster or whatever. So that's quite amusing in its way. It's a sort of, there's a commonality of people's existence, you know, which is nice in it.
One of the strongest, I'm going to say, secondary features of this quilt, because primary feature is that advertising towel. But then you look at your iconic dots, and you've got them here in two ways, which is interesting because in the quilt that I'm working on now, I'm thinking of text. And, you know, Russell, you use dots like I use text, I think. And yeah. I'm trying to find different ways to play around with it. And in this current project, I'm thinking of applique and reverse applique. And you've got something similar here where you have applique cut out dots, but then you have them repeated in this print that did the print already have dots? Did you sew those dots? Did you paint those dots? Like, we're seeing dots in multiple ways here.
Yeah, that was an upholstery fabric that I was just messing around with one day and practicing printing at home with that sort of little sponge circle. And it's funny because when I look at that quilt now, and my eyes are so used to dots, I don't always see those dots in the corner. And I forget that there's more than one on there. But yeah, that was something, a literal sample of me messing around that I decided to add in. And initially, I didn't put the applique dots. But for me, it wasn't busy enough. There was too much space on it. And then I just added the blue dots as a little flourish that, I don't know, just adds more interest to the composition.
Well, it creates a correspondence and keeps your eyes moving from one corner to the next, right over that advertising towel that you have featured in the center.
It's funny you should say about you using text as well, because I'm always trying to use text in my work and more kind of graphics and things. And that often comes through with tea towels and clothing and stuff. And again, that's on my list of things I keep telling people that I want to do. And I have occasionally, and I guess you're right, that the dots are my way of speaking. I don't know if that doesn't make sense, but
it's definitely part of your visual language. 100%.
Yeah.
And I love too, Russell, that, like, you know, we get to spend these long, luxurious minutes talking about these pieces that you've made. And I have them up on the screen while we're talking. I invite listeners to do the same thing. And I'm like, wait a second. I think I recognize that fabric now. The one that you printed the blue dots on, didn't that form the background of a whole nother quilt? I'm thinking like with a green shirt or something on it.
It did. Yeah.
See, listen, we love that stuff. We love that stuff. That something, it doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? A little piece here, a little piece there. I love that.
All the scraps. There's some scraps just go on forever and you don't realize. I did a quilt talk with a group from the British Quilt Guild last weekend. And as I was showing my work, people kept noticing the repeating fabrics and things. And it was interesting to me because I don't necessarily see that flow through the years of my work. And I kind of like that. It's part of what I do. Like, I literally will use all the scraps up. Yeah, that really appeals to me.
And it forms a connecting thread, if you will, through the pieces that tell their own story somehow, right? So it's like the pieces, the projects, the quilts themselves have their own story, but then you have this larger story that's also happening with the repeated use of scraps.
Yeah.
One thing that you have humbly failed to mention is that this particular quilt won first prize in sustainable quilts at Festival of Quilts. Am I right?
It did indeed.
Yeah. Congratulations.
that was a real shock. I was making both of those quilts we've spoken about at the same time as doing a final project for my college course that I was on. So I was my head was very into my own work. I've entered work into the Festival of Quilts before and with no intention of winning. I've never had that. Obviously, I don't think many people would consider that. But I realized in hindsight that I think I was making work that I thought other people would like to show. And then, so I was making these two pieces literally as something I love and telling a story. So when I got the call, whenever it was, the day the show started, I thought it was a joke. Like, you know, I was so shocked. And the fact that it was a new category, it was the sustainability category, which is, you know, exactly what I do. And so that was incredibly exciting for me. It gave me a boost. It corroborated that other people find something in my ideas and my work, which I know people do, and I don't want to sound falsely humble, but it felt a big deal for me in that way that other people saw it. So yeah, it was crazy.
Oh, it's entirely well-deserved, entirely well-deserved. You mentioned that you managed to make the shift from thinking about what kind of quilts do I think people want me to make to what kind of quilts do I want to make. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, basically, the first time I had applied to the Festival of Quilts, in hindsight, it was a pale imitation of somebody else's work. That's what I felt. And so I'd rather, I don't know, sort of get a bad review for something I was absolutely in love with than win for something that's awful, that kind of old kind of adage. So, yeah, just to trust your own ideas. That's what I think it happened. And doing my college course had sort of given me that space to breathe in and to trust my intuition and to not think about what other people are necessarily going to think. Because I think my work is quite niche within the quilting world, and I'm fine with that. And it's taken me a long while to use that almost as a superpower, like just double down on that then. And if people want to see something maybe a bit different or try something different themselves, then they can take inspiration from my work. And I'm more than happy to join them on that journey. But I can't just do somebody else's work is sort of what I've come to realize. And it was nice to sort of get past that moment. You know?
Is there anything you could share with us that might help somebody who feels currently stuck in the middle of a project and they're like, oh, I kind of want to do this, but it feels a little risky. It feels a little pushing the envelope. It feels a little avant-garde. Like, is there anything that's helped you learn to trust your own intuition when it comes to design choices?
Do you know, there's a few things. I mean, firstly, when I look at work, my own work, I just think, do I love it? If I saw that in a book or in a gallery or in a shop or whatever, would I think, hell yeah, that's for me? You know, would I want to pay money for that? Or, you know, would I buy a postcard and take that home and put it on my wall? It's that kind of, do I actually love it? You know, firstly, how does it make me feel? What does it make me think of? Do I connect with it? I think if you're feeling you want to make a change, you've kind of just got to do it. And also look at other work that does inspire you and nick bits of it. Like take other people's take. I mean, I look at your work, I look at lots of other great, Heidi, lots of other great people. And, oh, I'm just going to nick that technique and do that and try it. And then it filters through you, what you do, what you see. And it all does create something new. And I think that's the easiest way to do it rather than thinking I've got to, A, either follow somebody else's path completely or try and make something completely new, because neither of those is a good way to go. And certainly no one can create something completely new. You've just got to stick to your guns. And I think even if it feels wacky or silly, you know, you just have to do it. And sometimes with stories behind things that I've made, I don't tell anybody about it because it's a personal story or it's embarrassing or it feels silly. And maybe one day I will discuss that. But in terms of actually like technique and doing things, you know, I do a lot of sampling myself. What is the right way that I know how to do something or that other people have told me how to do it? I'm going to try and do something maybe the complete opposite. If they've said black, I'm going to say white. Like just try and set yourself a little challenge and eventually something will come up that feels very you. I remember actually that you said to me years ago on Instagram, one of my pieces of work had come up on the search page on Instagram. And you said, I knew that was yours as soon as I looked at it. And that was a moment for me because I was somebody actually saying that. I was like, I feel like I have a style that is, you can actually pin down, you know, which is a nice place to be.
Yeah. And I wonder, it's a circuitous path, isn't it? To work your way through so many different projects and figure out what is my way of making a quilt. And that's something Heidi and I talk a lot about. Like, what does a Heidi Parks quilt look like? What does a Zach Foster quilt look like? And it's all composites of everything we've ever admired. And so I really appreciate your perspective, which at first feels counterintuitive, which is to basically copy other people, you know, like in the micro. But there's something about the spirit of an object that if it catches your eye, that doesn't wholly belong to the other person who made that object. It's catching your eye because it resonates with something inside of you. And by identifying those moments that are catching your eye, you are paying honor to all those little sparks of inspiration inside of you that are distinctive. Mm-hmm. And so thinking of it more like sampling, like you said, I mean, it's worked for hip hop for years, right? So like, why can't we do that in quilting too?
Yeah, that's funny because I've been listening to a lot of podcasts recently on music that I like, from generally speaking from the 80s, that involves a lot of sampling, whether it's dance music or hip hop. And I had a moment, a little aha moment, where I was like I loved scrapbooking as a kid and making my own little collages, which transfers into what my work is now in textiles. And also, most of the music I love is cut up from the already existing things. And it suddenly made a neat little package of culture that kind of you can mix up what's gone on before. I love that.
Yeah, it's all a conversation. And you can add your voice. We need you to add your voice. You know, I like to think that, you know, there are 8 billion artists on this planet. And while there's nothing new under the sun, each one of us has a distinct way of mixing together the elements that only we can do. Let's switch now, if it's okay with you, to another piece that I feel like is in this a similar vein, but maybe even like amped up a little bit, which is As Old As My Tongue.
Yes.
And that's not even the full title. What's the full title for us?
It's As Old As My Tongue and Slightly Younger Than My Teeth.
Yeah. What can you first describe what this quote looks like for people who haven't seen it before?
Well, it's a bit wonky. It's not a square. It's slightly haphazard. There's sections coming off it. I would say the main motif is the dress that is sort of dancing in a curve. There's also a horse picture, which some people pick out first. So it's a real patchwork of things, of different fabrics. And when I say to people, it's basically a story of both of my grandmothers kind of together. That sort of makes sense to people a bit more. Sort of kitsch things that they had in their houses. The dress I basically found on eBay over one of the lockdowns. And it reminded me of my grandmother, my dad's mom. And it's very similar to one she had. And she loved dancing, so ballroom dancing. So that's where that story came from. And I already had the picture of the flowers is actually, I think it's New Order. It's their band album. It's one of their album covers, actually off a T-shirt. But again, it played into the sort of kitsch. Both my grandmothers had plastic flowers in their houses and this kind of thing. And there's the tea towel that's split across either side, food, kitchens. The main back of it that you can see at certain points is actually the top of an actual mattress that was in my bin room that I went down in the middle of the night and cut a big square off it with a scalpel.
Wait, the mattress you sleep on?
No, somebody else's mattress.
That they sleep on?
Yeah, they'd thrown out. It was in our building's bin room.
Okay.
So while I cut a whole thing off, brought it home, immediately put it in the washer.
Yeah, oh, is that the stripes that forms the foundations? The blue and white stripes?
Sort of shiny, yes.
It is a mattress. I see it now.
It's totally a classic kind of mattress. And because of that it was quite old, just through that quilt being moved around, it's actually started to shred slightly, which I kind of quite like. But the whole story was going to visit grandparents when I was a kid, and the rigmarole of getting out all the bed sheets, and you know, sometimes other friends or family would come look after us kids because my grandma would go to our dancing, or sometimes we would go with her. Just these little holidays that we'd have. And we always thought it was funny because we had duvets in our house, but my grandparents both had a cotton sheet with a wool blanket on top because that was their generation, you know, and they wouldn't have ever chucked something out that wasn't useful. So there's lots of bits in it. And then I've been experimenting with printable fabric that you just put into a regular inkjet printer. And I just opened a page on one of my sketchbooks and just scanned it and printed it. And I don't know if you can see in the pictures, but it says thank you, thank you, thank you repeatedly over it, just as a motif I liked. But then that, sometimes I still feel emotional saying it, but that was thanking them for the memories. And also they both were of that generation of very much make do and mend. And that's what I'm at. And I was originally going to square it off, but something, my family are not a close particular family, and there's a lot of complicated history. And I liked, and again, actually you had said years ago about one of your pieces of work, about the binding being like the house, and you'd left a bit of the binding off to keep an open house. And that was my slightly wonky home. It's slightly off kilter. So that's what that was about, really.
What I love about that, Russell, is that it's using every single part of the object to tell another part of the story.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not just the fabrics we choose, and it's not just the stitches, and it's not just the lemon yellow dots over the top. Mm-hmm. It's also the binding. It's also the mattress. It's also the batting that we often don't see in the back. I mean, it's all of it. It all adds up to tell the story.
Yeah, I mean, and also the in terms of the technical bits that I was doing with that, the dots are a slightly see-through fabric. There, you can sort of see everything through it. That was my first time doing that, and I remember thinking that was quite interesting. The dots bringing the whole composition together. That's, I find that often happens. So.
Well, and this is the funny thing. This is what I love so much about this particular piece. I mean, your work in general, but especially this piece, is all the layers that exist in your work. And I mean, it's borderline maximalist, especially this piece. And as someone who has just dabbled in maximalism in just a few different pieces, I'm thinking recently of like the Apogee Jubilee piece that I made.
Yeah.
And then Yes More Please with Heidi, that it's so fun to work with a maximalist energy. And I'm wondering if you experience this in your work as well, which is just like, you just almost have to have a blind faith from the beginning that you will get it to a place that will be beautiful. And you're going to kind of halfway hate it and question it the entire time. So you just keep adding more and more and more until you're happy with it. And so it's just kind of like, in a sense, it's almost foolproof. I mean, it takes a lot of work to get there, but it's done when you're happy. And if you're not happy, you're not done.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Because sometimes the things work, and I don't know, the magic happens through editing. And sometimes a space is nice, but you know that intuitively, I think. And often, you know, I'll have a pile of fabrics that I sort of have maybe collaged on my floor that I want to use. And occasionally things get put out, but sometimes everything gets left in, or just a bit of it, depending on what it is. But I'm a maximalist at heart. I think, I mean, I have a lot less things in my life now, but, well, you're surprising me. You can see what's all somewhere else now. But with my work, again, the rebel in me quite likes it, because there's this sort of notion that perceived good taste is about having space, and it's beige or it's white and it's not much else. It's sort of clean. And I like to rebel against that in all areas of my life, frankly. So certainly through my work, I want an impact. And also, as you say, I often have a lot of layers within the story I'm telling, and that translates to having a lot to say on the piece. And I know some people have said to me, oh, I appreciate all you've said and your technique and all that, but, you know, your work isn't my favorite, which is always the nicest kind of, I don't know, inverted compliment. And that's fine. As I say, you have to expect that not everyone's going to like what you've made. Whether they can pick something out of the stories you've told is a different matter, but you've got to be happy with it. So.
If you make a quilt that everybody likes, I mean, maybe this is a hot take, maybe this is controversial, but I think in some degree it'd be kind of boring, wouldn't it? Like, if it's universally appealing, then what's the specific thing that's going to get me going about it, you know?
You know, exactly. It would be like an Adele album track. It wouldn't be memorable. I'm sorry, that sounds cruel.
Another hot take. Wow, we got all of them.
Thank you. Yeah, you can't expect to appeal to everybody, so there's no point trying.
No, make yourself happy. Did you share this one with the kids?
Yes, I did. And they liked me talking about my grandparents.
I mean, it's really sweet. And thank you for sharing the story behind this quilt and the memories that you have associated with this quilt. Because when you talk about, you know, spending the night at grandparents' house and going to the linen closet and bringing out the sheets and the blankets, like that, I feel like is just a memory that a lot of us can tap into in our own lives. And it brings this piece to life. Like, I see it now. And I think that's really special. I also think, too, that I know this isn't per se a memory quilt, right? As far as memory quilt as a genre goes. But having made a fair number of memory quilts in my day, I will often hear someone express remorse for having given away a loved one's clothes right after they passed away. And what I will often say in response to that is, one, don't be too hard on yourself. I mean, you were grieving, you were just doing the best you could and you had a lot to do. But two, you can still tap into the memory in other ways. And often what I'll recommend is that they do what you did here, which is shop around, go on eBay, go online, go to a thrift store, and find pieces of clothing that remind you of your loved one. I did that for my grandfather because he passed when I was 16, so I wasn't even thinking about quilts at that time. But I do, when I'm at a thrift shop, if I see a shirt that particularly reminds me of him, I go ahead and buy it just to have on hand. And I think that's an alternate channel to accessing those memories that can be really lovely and accessible for folks that are looking to tap into that kind of memory work.
I think that's quite true, actually. And I've done that quite a few times, actually. A lot of the fabrics that I've used are similar to sort of bed sheets that I had when I was a kid, but not the actual ones. And when you do find the actual thing that matches the exact pattern, that's very exciting.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
But it almost goes back to that conversation about sampling, right? Which is, what is it about this shirt in the thrift store or on eBay that I'm looking at is calling to mind this person, my grandfather in my case? And so by looking at so many different garments and honing in on, oh yeah, Pawtead did wear a lot of pastel stripes, noticing the spark within helps us hone the language and the tools that we use to make our own work. Okay, Russell. So as we begin to close up this conversation, I'm wondering if we could take a quick look at your first quilt or one of your first quilts.
Yes.
And tell us how you see yourself represented in that quilt, but also describe for us the journey from that first quilt to the ones you've been sharing with us for the last hour. As a starting point, could you just describe visually this quilt? What are we looking at when we look at this quilt?
Well, so there's the main motifs are a pink t-shirt with red dots on and a pair of very thin trousers, pants in a blue with white polka dot. Both of these things are items that I made and wore for a few years. I think the dots is an old, I think it's an IKEA bedsheet or something. And the t-shirt was, I used to sell a lot of t-shirts and I was experimenting with dots. So the random bangle that it says on the logo used to be the name that I sort of call myself. And the rest of it is all different fabrics that I loved at the time. It was in a period where I'd lost a lot of clothes and fabrics in a flood, a very bad flood that I'd had. And when we eventually moved house after a year or so of living in temporary accommodation, I had all the stuff back that was able to be cleaned and dried. And I didn't know what I wanted to do because previous to that, I'd made a lot of costumes and done props and accessories for people. So I was pinning fabrics onto walls and hanging clothes on hooks, things that maybe didn't fit or I didn't use, and just displaying them in my house, things that I liked. And that's how I basically progressed into quilting, by laying them on the floor and thinking, oh, I'm going to actually sew these all together. And initially, when I made this, the shirt was on the left-hand side, and I cut the whole thing in half and reorientated it just because I just thought that was better for some reason. So there's a lot of 80s kind of sort of stripes and little sort of scribble designs going on. And as I put it together, I was thinking about sort of cogs in a machine. There's large circles and as things move, sort of move around. That was how I sort of came to those motifs. I mean, maybe you could argue they're giant dots that eventually shrunk down a bit. There's a lot going on there, really. And I remember when I made it, I didn't really know about quilting at all. So it's just quilted in straight lines, just up and down.
And pretty wide apart, too.
They're very wide apart. I wanted to do it quite quickly because I'd been working on it for so long that I was desperate to move on something else. There's actually, on the right-hand corner, there is a little embroidery that I started when I was about 16, I think. And I did a bit more, I can't think of the time scale, but I was in my 20s when I did a bit more. And it's a little spaceman floating in space with a little alien and there's planets and stars and stuff. So I added that in. Just things that I'd kept that I wasn't sure what to do with. And in some ways, I mean, I can look at it now and see that it was like a marker in my life. These were all things that I'd used and loved from other projects. And that was the sort of cutoff that I didn't just throw them out, but they all got sort of archived in a large quilt. I'm a bit shocked how big it is because I don't normally work that big now. I was pretty sort of cavalier with, let's just do this giant thing.
Well, we were young and foolish then, weren't we, Russell?
Yeah.
What would you, if you were to, so you made this in 2014-ish. If you were to make this again in 2024, do you have a first idea of how you might reinterpret this with the, through the lens of a quilter with 8 years of experience?
That's a tough one because I can't, I mean, firstly, on a technical note, all the fabrics used, they're all actually underneath there. They're not, I haven't cut anything off the back. And I would have done that because I would kill to get some of the sort of scribble fabric again. So I have considered actually, occasionally, every so often, to undo some of the stitches to liberate some of it out. But, you know.
So you're saying, for example, with like the pink shirt, you kept the shirt whole. You didn't like
the
cut
whole
out
thing
the
is
back.
There.
I see.
Yes. The dots are on the trousers are so see-through that you can actually see the dots on the other side. So it makes quite interesting shapes all the way through.
Almost like lunar shapes or like phases of the moon or something.
Yes, exactly that. Exactly that. I would definitely do it differently that way. But I mean, I don't particularly like all the patch shapes. It's just a rectangles. It's all very straight. I would add more curves in now, I think, if I redid it. It's funny because it hangs on our bedroom wall, so I look at it every day.
Oh, interesting.
But I've never sat and reassessed it and actually thought, what would I do differently? Which is what I actually do sometimes with other people's work or clothes or something, or even just images from a magazine. It's quite a good way to train your eye to immediately look at fabrics and objects and to kind of switch into ideas. It's quite a good sort of skill to learn.
Well, there's something too, over the years, Russell, I mean, you still have a lot going on in your quilts,
yep.
But it's refined and balanced in a way that in this early piece feels, well, like especially under the blue pants, for example, like you have a lot of shapes there and not as many shapes under the pink shirt.
Yeah, that's right? True.
So like you have found ways in the last several years to keep the high number of elements intact, but do it in a way that feels increasingly balanced, which is really nice.
Yeah, I think that's true, actually. It's funny looking at old work because I guess there's a slight embarrassment because it's more naive than what I would do now, but I still really like it because I love all the stripes and the sort of the fabrics are fun and, as I say, quite 80s.
Well, I really appreciate you letting us look at this with you for a moment, because when I think about my early... Russell, after we get off this phone call, I'm going to send you a link to my very first Instagram quilt post ever. It was January 2012, and it was a pinwheel block, and it got exactly one like. To this day, it has one like. So I get the sense of vulnerability. I just want you to know I really do appreciate it. But that's why we grow. We hope to grow over the course of our lives. And so it's nice to step back and acknowledge that, hey, I'm doing some stuff really well here, right?
Because also in your normal life, you don't often sit back and look at things. And as I say, because I did talks recently, I've been planning talks with quilt groups, it's forced me to look back at my own sort of timeline. And it's quite nice because you can see things you might change, but show progression in your work. It made me realize I need to only very recently started actually signing my work. And I've gone back and signed some old work and dated it. Because I think that's quite a nice thing to
learn. 100% agree. Well, on the note of introspection, what would be your first pass at the giant seam side thesis question, which is, how has working with textiles made you more human? How has it put you in touch with yourself in a way that might not have been possible otherwise? How has it supported personal growth for you? What comes to mind when you think about that?
Well, I mean, firstly, I think just my own growth in sort of building my own confidence. And we've spoken about the sort of imposter syndrome of having never feeling quite good enough. I've always been around textiles since I was a kid. And that slowly evolved into making quilts. And then my version of that has always been very at home, very in my own little box. And then putting it on Instagram. And then that's a little world in itself, and that changes how you do things sometimes. But sort of getting myself out of the trenches and actually going to meet people and discuss work and actually having people come to you looking for answers, like, oh, will you come and talk about this? It's boosted my own confidence. And also it's expanded what I do because I've been changed by other people, because other people have either given me tips or talked about their work. So it's made me feel more real, and actually to call myself an artist or a quilter doesn't stick in my throat anymore. I can do that, you know? And that feels lovely. I guess the human connection is sort of what I'm aiming at, because I'm quite a shy person by nature. And I wear a lot of color, I use a lot of color, and I always feel like that's talking for me. And I mean, years ago, even doing this sort of thing, I would have probably said no to, because it makes me too nervous. But having people appreciate what I do, and then, as I say, working with other people has changed how I am as a person, which I can't necessarily quantify, but it feels good.
So feels really good. Yeah. What you shared reminds me of what my friend Patrick talks about, which is there's something about textiles that while you're working with them, you're always touching something. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about, for him, and I hear a little bit of that in your answer as well, that says that textiles are tactile. They put us in touch with our own bodies, in Patrick's case, but one another in your case. I think it's really beautiful, really beautiful. So thank you for sharing that with us. Russell, any parting words for us?
Oh, I should have thought of a really interesting little...
I should have told you.
I just say, just be bold and go for it and enjoy yourselves. That's it.
Love that. Perfect advice. Russell, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ooh, thank you, Russell. I love that conversation. I love how Russell is saying yes, being bold, using color, thinking about layers, and just adding to his work. He brings so much permission to the practice, which I find so inspiring. If you find yourself sitting there with some brand new ideas while listening to this chat, you know, maybe you're over there writing little notes to yourself so you don't forget, or maybe you've been sketching out an idea, or maybe you walked over to your fabric stash and just pulled some new colors out, I sure would love to hear about it. If you'd like, you can share it on social media. Just make sure to tag me at zachfoster.quilts so I can share it with others and they can see how these conversations here on Seamside are inspiring your own practice. All that said, I'll be back next week with another conversation. Until now and next week, I hope you're well. I hope you're sewing something good. And I hope to see you soon. Maybe on the Nook. Who knows?